Thanks, everyone. Okay, thanks for coming out, everyone. I think I've got about half an hour of content, so I would love it to be interactive. So please feel free to shoot out questions as I go. I don't want to wait till the end. So can everyone hear me in the back? Is that okay? Okay. So first of all, just I want to get a sense of who's here. Like, raise your hand if you're currently in consulting. So most people, the people that aren't, what are you doing? Not like what are you doing here, but like what do you do? And, other roles for product management? Okay, cool. Okay, so mostly consultants,
probably. You say consulting, you mean business consulting.
Well, that was my next question.
Software development consulting or attorney consulting.
That was my next question. What areas of consulting are various people working in? Because I think consulting covers all. So do we have any management consultants, for example? Okay. And how about technology? I figured I see mostly technology. And I heard accounting earlier. Anything else? Something cool?
Lawyer.
Oh, cool. Okay. Well, so welcome to my talk. I'm going to talk. So I was in consulting for a long time. Then I moved into product management. I'm going to try and give you an overview of what I think, how to make that transition, what makes it easy and what makes it difficult. And as I said, please feel free to just shoot out questions as I go. So I'm going to jump right into it. That's my first slide. So I'm going to start with just a brief intro of myself, and then I'm going to talk about when you make that move, what the real easy part is, like what part of consulting really transfers over. And there's quite a bit of stuff. And then I'm going to talk about what to forget immediately. So there is a lot of stuff in consulting that doesn't transfer over very well, and it behooves you to shed that as soon as you can. Then I'm going to talk about some of the major lessons that I've learned in making that transition. And then I'll talk about how I think, you know, some strategies to prepare. And then, oh, looks like I have a meeting. And then, apparently my wife's going to yoga. And then I'll give you some parting thoughts. And again, jump in at any time. So, you know, going from, okay, I'll talk about myself. So a long, long, long time ago, not that long ago, in 2005, I graduated from the University of Waterloo as a computer engineer. It's a Canadian school, for those of you that have never heard of that country. It's not far from here. And so I went from there into consulting, and I worked at Deloitte for a fair period of time. I worked my way up the ranks. I really enjoyed it there. I started doing mostly technology consulting, and I was doing sort of implementation projects, so various like systems. You know, I built an SAP system, a data warehouse, things like that. And then I moved more, as I got progressed in my career, more into the strategy and advisory side. In what we call the technology strategy practice. So I did a lot of, you know, answering questions for CIOs and stuff like that. And from there, I decided to go and do an MBA. And the reason I did that was not because I wanted to get out of consulting or I wanted a career change. I just wanted to not work for a while because I was, like, sick of working. And I wanted to go somewhere that wasn't here to do that. So I landed in England, and I did an MBA at Oxford, had a fantastic time. While I was there, I was kind of opened up to the world outside of consulting. And, you know, as a consultant, you're sort of, you know, I was cocky. You know, I was like, I can do anything. I can be a banker. I could be a trader. I could be an astronaut if I want to be. I'm like, you know, and the truth is you really do get a lot of good transferable skills into pretty much any job when you come out of consulting. So a friend of mine was working at Google in product management, and she said, you know, why don't I give you a referral? And so she referred me in, and one thing led to another, and I ended up in product management at Google. I fell on it by accident. Very happy I did, because I love the job. I was there for 4 years. I worked on their various ads products. I'm not going to go into detail on that now, but if you're interested, we can talk after the class. And then after 4 years, this opportunity came up at MongoDB that I couldn't turn down. And so now I'm managing the enterprise management tooling around the MongoDB database. And I've been there for about a year. So that's my backstory. And so, like I said, I was ready to do anything here. And I thought, you know, product management, yeah, I'll get, I'm a consultant. I'll get in there and I'll just hit the ground running. I'll be a VP in like a year and a half, you know? But what I found out was it is a pretty significant career change. And there's a lot of, you know, potential friction and things that you have to learn in order to make that transition. And so that's kind of what I'm hoping to talk about right now. Any questions? So the easy part, this stuff I think is actually fairly obvious, but I'm gonna go through it anyway because I think it's important. These are the skills that like every consultant has, and they transfer over really well into a role as product manager. And you know, if you're taking notes, this is what you can rhyme off in a job interview when they say, in fact, I did rhyme this off in my Google job interview when they said, why are you gonna be a good product manager? You know, communication and presentation. So that's, I think that's obvious. You have to do that in consulting. You're constantly, you know, presenting. I think a key part of this is to be able to present information in a logical way. You know, as a product manager, engineers aren't very good at communicating. And so, well, not all of them. In fact, some of them are really, really good. But, you know, it's part of your job is to be the front of the engineering team. Communicate with customers, with partners, with the market, etc. And then also being able to present back to your engineers, because if you want to get them to build stuff. So that's something that should come over very well. Talking to customers, another one, dead easy. You do that in consulting constantly. As a product manager, that's arguably the most part of your job, the most important part of your job, is to actually get out, talk to customers, talk to salespeople, interview them for requirements, come in and help land a critical deal that's run into some issues. So that's when the transfer's over. Solving problems, another thing you do all the time in consulting. You're in an ambiguous situation and you need to solve a complex problem for your customer. You need to figure out how to design something. All of these things, you know, you do every day as a product manager. You have an ambiguous problem that you need to solve with your product. You have a set of features and you need to figure out which ones to build first. You have to work with engineers to design stuff. That's all problem solving. And then lastly is negotiating. And negotiating, again, you know, something you do in both cases. I think what surprised me about where you do this the most and where this became the most important skill is not like negotiating on behalf of my company for some deal with a partner or on a sale. It's negotiating with my engineering team on what I want them to build. Because if they don't, you know, you're at the behest of your engineers. If they don't build what you want them to, then you just don't get any product. And so, you know, you don't have direct control over anybody as a product manager. By the way, a lot of what I'm going to say is going to be relatively tech-oriented because that's the world that I'm in. So if you have a question that's outside of that, I can try and answer it, but I'm not too familiar with non-tech-oriented products. Okay, so now, what to forget immediately. Does anyone recognize that clip? This is the bankers versus consultants YouTube video. I thought it was hilarious when I watched it. But so the first thing I have listed there is decks. Now, everyone who's a consultant must be like a master at creating the best decks on the earth. You know, like aligning the boxes so that there's 2 pixels between each space and then the exact shade of blue, and this is the exact shade of gray. And we spend sleepless nights on end making decks. In a product management role, if you have a deck that, you know, is so well done, people are gonna look at it and miss the entire message of the deck. And they'll go, why the hell did this guy spend so much time on this freaking deck? He's like, does he not have any work to do? Like, it's not really valued in those organizations to have, like, hence this piece of garbage I'm presenting to you right now. It's got the information, but it's not, you know, aligned. I didn't spend that much time on it. And that's what people expect, at least in my experience in product management. You have to make sure you get the information flowing properly. That's an important skill. And that goes back to the last slide. But, you know, don't worry about aligning your boxes. The Boys Club is another thing that I found was pretty strong in the consulting world. If you know the right people and you go drinking with them and you have dinner with them and you know you get in with them, you know, you're going to sort of move up faster. Maybe that's not the case in the various firms you work at, but it definitely was where I worked. And that is absolutely not the case in my experience in the product management world. The only thing that matters is the impact that you produce for your company. So, you know, people really only care, because at the end of the day, like, you are as good as your product that you're building. And if that doesn't do very well, like, it doesn't matter who you know. So that's something to keep in mind. Politics and transparency. Now, this might be more of a tech community thing rather than a product management thing, but it applies heavily to product managers and tech. You know, politics are sort of frowned upon, and transparency is you know, people take a lot of pride in transparency. So we're in the consulting world, you know, it's sometimes to your advantage to withhold information to gain power over another group or to play politics within your customer. I mean, to be honest, a lot of what you, I would say your skills you get out of consulting with customers is playing the politics, figuring out who's the power person and how to connect with them and all that. You can forget all that because it's irrelevant in you know, tech companies are flat. There's not very many layers. You know, you come in and you'll just report to the VP or report to the CEO, and that's it. And so there's not, you know, everybody tries to give everybody as much information as possible. Nobody's trying to steal land from other people. So if you come in with that mentality, you should try and drop it as fast as you can. The last thing is delegating. So my wife also moved from consulting into, she's not in product management, but she's at Google in project management. And she likes to say, as a product manager, you need to do the role of an analyst, a consultant, a senior consultant, a manager, senior manager, and a partner all in the same day. So like literally the same day you might be rolling up your sleeves and actually, you know, testing your product. And then like later that afternoon, you're doing a presentation to the executive steering committee. So, you know, so like you, the organizations are very flat. You typically don't have people reporting to you. I mean, until you get up to very high levels. And so, you know, delegating is something that was important in the consulting world. Delegate down, delegate down. That's not the case as a product manager. You need to roll up your sleeves and do dirty work, so to speak. Any questions on that? Probably. Probably, although I have seen, like, I went to Dell EMC the other day, and, you know, they're pretty old bureaucratic. I mean, not that old, but...
They're like an enterprise.
Right, but I did notice that you could tell inside they're running agile. They've got, like, scrum meetings set up. They've knocked down all the walls. Like, you know, they're really trying to move in that direction. But I think you're right. You probably would still see more of that. In like old school companies, but I think they're trying to change. Okay, so now I'm going to go through some of the key lessons that I learned about the friction from the. See, like I said before, it is a career change, so you know you're going to have to adjust. And I think these are the lessons looking back that I learned that can help you adjust maybe quicker. I think everybody would probably have different lessons of their own, but hopefully some of these resonate and can be of value. So the first one is don't underestimate the culture. So this is not an exaggeration of what you see every day, you know, at Google or at MongoDB or any other, you know, tech company. When I started, I had those couches everywhere in the office, and I was working at my desk and I was kind of zoned in. And then I came to and was going to get up to take a break, and there was a couch beside my desk. And there was a guy, and I just looked over, and there was a guy in shorts that were about this, booty shorts, I think, and no shoes, and he was just sleeping, just taking a nap. And then, like, you know, and I just walked around him and then came back to my desk. And then at some point he got up and he's like, oh, hey, man. He just walked away. I mean, that's the kind of thing that you see. So, you know, it's a weird environment. Now, engineers, a lot of companies nowadays are very engineering driven, especially product development companies. Engineers are weird. No offense to the engineers out there. I'm an engineer. But engineers are really weird. They don't care about, like, timelines and, like, money even really, or, you know, they'll laugh at you if you say things like FTEs or like, you know, we can reduce FTEs. They'll be like, what the, you know, they'll just blank stare at you. So, you know, you kind of have to find a way to not just come in and be like doing your consultant speak and making decks and like driving forward, drive, you know, that's not how you're going to connect and make progress with engineers. You know, in my experience, you need to focus on the things I mentioned earlier, making impact and inspiring people about your product and your product vision. And that's the way to go, rather than, you know, trying to drive forward on getting things done by a certain time, or you know, using a bunch of big fancy words, Harvey balls. Don't use Harvey balls. Any questions on that? Okay. But this one is, like, I really mean that there is a big cultural shift, and coming from wearing, like, I dressed up today for you guys. I would normally wear, like, shitty jeans and, like, a golf shirt. Okay, I think I made that point.
Can you try to hang out with them?
Yeah, and get, boom, you just hit my good transition. She's not working for me. The other thing that, so this one I found, how to spend your time, I found challenging, because consulting, or at least the world I was in, was fairly regimented. You know, if you're on a delivery project, it's planned out. You know what's happening when and when you're supposed to deliver stuff, and you have 50 meetings all day that you need to go to, and that's everything's sort of laid out for you. Even if you're on the bench, you know, maybe even there you'll figure something out. You might have some projects that are ambiguous, but even then, like, you sort of put a plan together and move forward with it. So when you come into product management, you're just sort of given all this autonomy and responsibility, and no idea, like, what to do when. So this is how I've kind of figured out to my way to spend my time, and everybody's probably different. But I basically do a third of my time in each bucket. So, like, you could say during the week, I do a third, a third, a third. Engineers. So this is probably most critical. The engineers are building stuff for you. If they don't build stuff for you, then you don't have a product, and what are you there for? So, you know, you really need to get entrenched with the engineers. You need to get involved in their design meetings. You need to get involved in their, you know, in the details of what they're doing day to day. You need to get to know them and hang out with them and get on their side so that they'll do stuff for you. So, yeah, you know, it's very important to get involved with engineers. Sorry. Okay.
Well, is this an engineer?
Yeah, see, I didn't get to know that.
Installing an AC?
We'll fight through it. We'll fight through it. Second bucket, customers. And so, obviously, this is where you get your information about what to do with your product. Engineers don't talk to customers, so if you don't talk to them, the engineers have no idea, and they're going to build a spaceship when you're working for a database company. And you don't want spaceships. So you want to get out and talk to customers. Customers can also, by the way, be internal. Sales folks. You want to get out and talk to sales folks. You want to talk to support. You want to talk to marketing. And this is really how you gather your intel, your information about what's going on in the world. Did everyone hear that? Is that okay? And then the last third is by yourself. And this one was actually the biggest challenge for me coming from engineering, consulting. And I literally mean by yourself. You should spend a third of your time sitting by yourself. Because you need to know what your competitors are doing. You need to be on top of the latest trends in your industry. You need to, like, train yourself. And the only way to do that is to take time and do it. So you know, I really mean, like, taking 6 hours on a Friday and just, like, sitting by yourself and reading stuff, clicking through your product and making sure you understand all the use cases, thinking about what the strategy should be. You know, maybe you can throw a few other product managers in this bucket too and strategize. That's all important time to take. I think it's, maybe it's, I'm not conveying how this is something that you don't really do, or I didn't really do in consulting, and I learned that you need to feel comfortable doing as a product manager. Just taking time and learning and thinking and strategizing is very important.
Yeah, in that customer's bucket, would that include like getting sales data or talking to data analysts on how you can, you know, more segment or?
Yeah, that would be a good cross between this, but yeah, you're right. Like sometimes you talk to your sales finance team and gather data there, or Google has like a billion data scientists that you can go to. You don't find that in a small company, but yeah, that's important. Another question?
How prevalent is like market research? Or do you pretty much like, or is it more experimental?
Market research is critical. We do customer surveys. We obviously try and get a lot of feedback through our product. We have accounts with all the major market research firms. We hire like there's some online code thing, I can't remember what it's called, but we hire them to give us a report of what their users are doing. I mean, so it's very important. But the more data and information you can get about what your customers are doing, the better. The better off you are. Get to know the customer. This one is obvious. This is like product management 101, but I wanted to put it up anyway. And I actually think that this has a lot of parallels from consulting. But everybody's probably heard the, like, what would Henry Ford build if he didn't... Does everyone know that? Raise your hand if you don't know that. What would Henry Ford have built? What would Henry Ford have built if he didn't ask his customers... Or if he asks his customers what they want, they would have said a faster horse. So the point of that is, like, you don't listen to what the customers tell you. You need to find out what they actually, what their pains are and what they really need, not what they say they need. And so the point of this is get out and talk to customers as much as you can. Get some, you know, I have about 5 or 6 that I've built up now at MongoDB, key customers who I can just call up and be like, hey, you know, I have beers with them once in a while. You want to talk to them monthly and be like, what's going on? How are things going? What's going on in your company? You know, what are you working on? What's holding you back? So that you really get a sense of like what is going on with your users so that you can really help them. And I think this parallels consulting in the way that, you know, you're trying to identify what the pains of an organization are so you can provide services to them. But it's a bit different because I think in this case, you really want to get down to the user and like watch them use the product, understand their use cases, you know, in detail, get to know what makes them tick.
What's the difference in approach between talking to retail customers versus like corporate or institutional customers?
It's a good question. I mean, I don't know that there's a real difference other than our business. So I've mostly worked in B2B. Our business right now has consumers because we have like 25 million people that use our database. None of them pay us for it, but they're users. So, I mean, the best way to get information from them is just to poll them and look at trends. Whereas with our actual paid enterprise customers, we go talk to them. You know, but still, you want something that's like statistically significant in some way and like quantifiable. So surveys are good. Looking at interaction in the product is good.
And so when you send out a survey, what percentage of your customer base would actually reply?
It's usually 10%, depending on whether you're trying giving them an Apple Watch or not. You can get it a little bit higher. It's usually low, but that's not, you still get like a pretty good, you know, pretty good idea of how people are using the product. I mean, we're working more and more to get feedback built into the product. That's the ideal. But even then, you're going to miss out on like quantitative things that you would only hear if you sat down with the guy and talked to him. So that I can't stress that enough. Like, go to their work site, see where they're working so you can picture it, you know. Technical support is very important to a point, because technical support, the channel has like a certain selection bias of people that are angry at that moment because they've run into an issue. So it's good it's good in highlighting things that will help you reduce your services burden and cost. It's not really good at highlighting things that will generate more revenue or even, you know, will help customers in any given way, other than like make them a bit less angry for that one issue. So it is valuable. It's more valuable if you're thinking about like you're in like a scaling phase rather than a growth phase or something. At least that's how I see it. Okay, details, question there? That pretty much happens for every single feature you ever want to build. I'm not joking. Every single time you want to build a feature, you take it to engineering and they go, no, can't be done. It's not going to happen. And then, so it's we call it at Mongo the art of inception. You need to somehow implant into their mind subconsciously that you want them to build this feature, and it works. Like, you sort of drop hints here and there. See, most people if there's some big feature that's like a big change to some architecture that you have, or it seems like unwieldy, or it's a change in direction or something, most people are going to be resilient to change. So just going like, hey, I want to build this, it's not going to work, because they'll go, no, that's not happening. But if you can like weave the story into their brains, like, over time, by just, you know, oh, hey, this is what happened at Apple today, you know, or this is what happened at this customer, you know, and then like throw some ideas. So it's negotiating, really. Art of inception.
So you start the process of convincing them, say, 3 months
ago,
before actually proposing them to.
Months is optimistic. No, I'm joking. Yeah, I mean, it depends on the feature. But yeah, sometimes you need to start well in advance and sort of just supplant things here and here. And that's a big part of the job, actually, is getting the engineers on board with what you want to build. If you can show, like, a genuine positive impact to your user from doing a feature, you know, it's hard for them to argue against it. You actually bring up something that I'm going to touch on right now. So details. This is something that I think is also important in consulting, but you need to get into the next level of details as a product manager. So let's go on that same theme of getting engineers to build something. I would argue that you need to know as much detail about your product as you possibly can. And I mean, like, getting down into the technology aspect of it. Like, what's the architecture that it's built in? What code is it built in? What coding standards are they using? How do they do testing? Things that seem like they're really engineering heavy. But if you do that, see, if you come to an engineer and you don't know that stuff and you just say, I want to build this feature, they'll go 6 months and 5 engineers. And you have no way of really coming back. You know, you have nothing to come back with. But if you understand, even to some degree, what's going on in the system, you'd be surprised at what a non-technical person can, because, you know, engineers have a very certain way of thinking. You'd be surprised at how a non-technical person can see different angles that they're not seeing, and get them to sort of give some leeway on building the feature or think about it in a different way. So details are very important. Like, get to know your product. Get to know every use case that how anyone uses your product. Get to know every button that's on every screen. Get to know every, you know, every bug that not every bug, but like the main features that people have been requesting and how many people are requesting them. It's all very important. Get to know, so that's your own product. Get to know your competitors' products. You have to know, like, what are your three biggest competitors and what are they doing and how are they going to slowly eat up on you if you don't put something out there that's competitive or, you know, strategic. You know, I said before, get to know your customers. You got to get to know your business, because at any time you could be pulled into the CEO's office and he'll ask you about the product and then has the line, you know. So you really need to get into the details as much as you can over time. And this is, I think, slightly different from consulting, because in consulting, you can kind of drift at a level where, you know, you can like magically talk to anything and make it sound like you know the details, but you don't really. But here you really do need to know the details. So I'd stress that one. Any questions there? Okay. Absolutely. Critical. Yeah. And I actually have a slide on that. There's so many things, there's so many languages, but at the end of the day, there's not really that. Like what he mentioned is in the course that they're teaching for coding for masters, or what was it? Coding for managers. I mean, that's pretty much the extent of what you need to know, plus MongoDB, which you should throw in there. We'll talk about that. But yeah, I mean, there's not, like, if you learn the basics, you know, and then you're hearing these guys talk about it every day, you'll pick stuff up. You don't need to be a master coder by any means. Okay, you have to be agile. So I think the folks that are in technology consulting will understand this, or will know this. It's kind of table stakes. Anybody else, you also may know this as well, but in the product development world, You absolutely have to deliver your product. Let me think about how to say this. If you take too long to go to market and you spend all your time designing what you think is going to be the perfect solution, first of all, it's going to be wrong, because nobody can ever come up with the perfect solution in their head. It's just not possible. And so whatever you come out with, people will have gripes about and they'll want it to be better. Secondly, the longer you wait, the faster the market, the more the market has moved. And so what you set out to achieve in the beginning, you know, the ground has moved from under you by the time you actually launch it. In consulting, we get, you know, in certain situations, not every situation, but we want to deliver like the perfect product to the customer, and then we just give it to them, and then, you know, someone presents it, and then that's it, and then we're out of there. You can't do that as a product manager. You have to be comfortable with launching quickly and iterating. So get something to market, an MVP we call it, minimum viable product. What is the minimum amount of requirements that I can get out that'll help this person solve something, and then prompt them to give me feedback on what they really want and how I can improve it. And so everything you put out, if you take more than 3 months to put out a feature, then that feature has failed, in my opinion. So you should be getting stuff out really quickly. Don't worry about it being not the complete full solution that you want, because you want to get a short feedback loop. The best analogy I've ever heard is a thermostat. So the way it works is it like reads the temperature, and then it says, okay, well, I need to put some more air to make it hotter. So it does that, and then it reads the temperature again. It's like, oh, it's gone up a bit, but I still need to put more air. So it's a feedback loop. But imagine it only read that air every like 3 hours. So it like reads the temperature now, and it's like, oh, I gotta put some air out, and then stops, and then waits 3 hours, and then reads the air again. Obviously, it's, you know, you're gonna be back where you started. So that's kind of a paradigm here. Like, you want to launch and just quickly get feedback so you can keep building and building and iterating, and get the right product for your customer.
During your time at Google and you guys use similar practices.
Every team that I've worked on in Google and in MongoDB is totally different. Like, even within Google, There's varying forms of agile. The team I'm working on right now at Mongo is 100% Kanban. I don't know if you know what that. Some of you have heard of that. I won't go into it because it's really confusing. But
no sprints.
No sprints. It's a total ticketing system. I mean, we have a cadence for like releases and planning and prio, but from the engineer's perspective, it's just a bunch of tickets flowing through, and stuff gets done pretty quickly. Did I answer your question?
So in consulting, in system implementations, there's a lot of business requirements documents, functional specs. Do those live in this sort of space as well, or is it more of an abbreviated format?
Yeah, again, that's totally dependent on your team, on the team you're on, but I would encourage you to go by the principle of like only document what you absolutely have to and do it just in time. So in other words, like, that's a good point, actually. In consulting, you can get paid for writing like 5 requirements documents, and that is a valid output of work that the customer may do something with or may sit on the shelf for a year. In your own product development company, that is like something that's not going to be developed tomorrow is completely not useful. Like every day that goes by between when you've written it and when the product is out, it loses its value. So we try and document, you know, as minimal use cases form your user stories as we can and do them when we need to, so that we're writing it, developing it, moving on to the next thing. We still do them. It's a big part of the job. But you're not writing the requirements document to write the document. You're writing the requirements document to communicate to the other parties what they need to build and test and document. And you know what I mean? So, question? Okay. I think that was my last. How are we doing on time? Okay. I don't have much more, so we'll get into questions. Okay, so here's the exciting part. How to prepare. So this is how, looking back, the ways I think you can prepare to move from consulting into product management. And the first is, you've taken the first step already, and that's learn. So that's learn about product management. Go to things like this and listen to product managers speak about the job. Product school sounds like they do some of that as well. But I mean, really, like, talk to product managers, because I think the reason I say that is because it gets you a sense for what that job actually is, and then gives you some comfort as to whether that's what you want to do or not, how product managers think about stuff, you know, and it'll just sort of get you down that road. Second, work on a product. So this is something that you can do in consulting, especially if you're in an implementation type of situation. You know, I built a bunch of systems for customers. So to one example, and I used this example in my Google interview, I built a data warehouse for an insurance company. Effectively, I was the product manager for that data warehouse because I went out and gathered all the requirements around that company. I, you know, worked with the business, worked with the various stakeholders to get information. I worked with the engineers to get it built. You know, I worked with the communications team to get it launched. So, I mean, that is effectively what a product manager does. So if you think about your job that way when you're in consulting, you are kind of, in implementation projects, you are kind of mini product manager, so to speak. There are other ways, though, to work on a product. Like, when you're on the bench, you're often doing stuff internally for your firm. So let's say you're rolling out a new recruiting strategy or something, or platform. That's your product. Just become the product manager of it, you know, and do everything that a product manager would do with that product, and then you have a good story to tell when you come to your product management interview. I mean, you know, you get some experience there. Make impact. This is something that's stressed in consulting, and even more so in product management. It's the only way that you're evaluated is how much impact did you make. That's it. And so if you can show that you've positively affected one of your customers, you know, like, track it over time, or show that you've developed some services revenue for your service line, for your firm, or you've rolled out some system that's improved things internally, you know, whatever the case may be, So make sure you track that and make it quantifiable, because I think that will go a long way in your road to becoming a product manager. We've talked about this a few times. Get to know technology. So you don't need to know it. You don't need to be a staff software engineer, Google level. I would recommend though that you understand how the internet works, understand how systems are built, understand what these weird languages that people talk about are, understand how to do an easy website, understand how to interact with a database. That's pretty much it. And it doesn't take, it doesn't take much to really learn that. And the reason it's important is because A, you're going to be interviewed by an engineer. At most product management roles will have an engineer come and interview you, and they're looking to see that, like, can I deal with this guy on a technical basis, or is that going to be really annoying? So if you have something, it'll help you. And also it gets you along the road to what I said before is an important skill as a product manager. And then the last thing is get a referral. If you really want to get a job, I mean, I think this is probably the same with most careers, but like get to know people that are working there and get referred in. Because I know in both cases at Google and at MongoDB, we look very heavily on referrals. We weight those heavily. I've seen a lot of people come in through. In fact, I would venture to guess that like 70% of product managers are hired through referrals. I don't know. I just completely made that number up, but that's a guess. So if you can, like people reach out to me on LinkedIn and sometimes I respond if they have a nice message like, hey, we worked at Deloitte together, I'm interested, blah, blah, blah. I'll respond, and sometimes it leads to a referral. Questions there? Okay.
Well, because I
would just
have prior experience in doing the product management, I'm just switching to this role.
Right. Well, I would, in terms of getting a referral, you just need to go out and meet people. Mm-hmm. In terms of how to spin your background experience, we can chat about that later if you want.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyone else before I... Okay. So that's pretty much all I had. I'll give some parting thoughts. Consulting, like if you're a child and your mom says, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you say, product manager, then the great first step is to go into consulting. Like I would almost recommend that, like go into consulting, because I think it's a perfect training ground for a lot of the skills that you need in product management. Having said that, it is a big, substantial career change. Yeah, that's the next. It is a substantial career change. So you're going to face some friction. You're not going to hit the ground just running and all of a sudden you're Steve Jobs. I mean, you're going to go through some pains and learn some lessons, and I think that's important to know, because I didn't know that. You'll get a lot of autonomy and very little direction. So when I came into Google, I was given this product that was making about $200 million a year. And I was like, wow, that's a lot of money. And Google was like, that's not a lot of money, dude. But I mean, I'm given this product. And then like my boss, sits down, talks with me. And then I don't see him for another month. And I'm making decisions about this product. You're sort of just thrown into a role where you own the product and you're running with it. And so that can be a little bit much for some people, especially coming from a consulting world where it's very, very, it's almost like military regimented. So with that, like product management is not for everyone. That's why I think it's important to get out and learn about it. You may not like it. I've seen a lot of people leave and go like drive Ubers. Actually, most people that leave drive Ubers. Really. Most people I've seen leave drive Ubers. But yeah, anyway, I don't know what to say there. But yeah, that's all I had. So I'll open up to questions now and discussion.
Sure. I think a lot of people feel like they're Steve Jobs these days. Have you seen product managers kind of get real passionate but not have really the right skill set or personality and have seen people fail, kind of?
Yeah.
Maybe not at your company, or have you heard about that kind of happening?
No, I have. I mean, I've seen it firsthand, and the way I see it play out is like, people don't do this. Like, I've seen folks come in and sort of like, just like, can't be bothered to deal with engineers. And then, and they might be out like learning the market and like doing the strategy. And then when it comes to ears and ears, they're like, yeah. And then nothing gets done. And then they just really, they're just kind of battling the engineering, and then it just sort of flounders. Or if you're sort of not doing this and you're unable to really bring any new insights back to the engineering team, you know, you're not gonna get anything done either. So that's usually how I see people falter, when they like sort of don't like one aspect of it and then choose to ignore it. Yeah, that's a great question, because it highlights sort of the things that you think of as a consultant that you no longer have to worry about as a product manager. Because in a good engineering team, there are systems in place such that work is flowing. And if it's not, you know, it's not that you need to pick at the engineer and be like, you know, when are you going to get this done? You need to pick at the system as to why the code, you know, stuff is blocked or not blocked. So as a product manager, you know, we have stand-ups in the morning. This is a typical thing in product development. And you go around the room and you say, what did you do yesterday? What are you working on today? And what's blocking you? And so as a product manager, the most important thing you can think of is, what's blocking them and how can I go unblock that? Right? You know, most people are not just like screwing around and not doing the work. They're either blocked or, you know, and if they are sort of a non-underperforming resource, that's not your problem. Somebody in engineering will deal with that. So it's all about getting the right system in place and making sure you can facilitate them getting their work done. Yeah, definitely. The way I like to organize my time is I like to minimize context switching. Has anyone heard of this before? Yeah, so if you're sitting there and you're like doing one thing and then another thing and another thing and another thing, and they're all sort of bounced around different subject matters, I find that A, I get exhausted, because there is some actual like physical thing that happens in your brain when you switch from one thing to another. And B, I have like ramp down time and ramp up time, so I'm not as efficient. So I try and block, like allocate slots where I do certain things. So like Monday is usually my day where I'm like dealing with the engineers, because we have our product update meeting that afternoon, we have a scope review meeting in the morning, and then the rest of the time, like, I'll be in the stand-up or I'll just be wandering around like chatting with them, you know, what's going on with this feature, blah, 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 just stuff like that. Yeah. Like, I'll write feedback about a customer that I've got, or, I mean, mostly it's like I'm sitting with them, understanding what they're working on now, what's blocking them, you know, what are we thinking about? Is the scope maybe too big? Do we have to cut it in certain ways? What challenges are you running into technically? Stuff like that. So yeah. And so that would be my Monday and probably like half of a day in another time during the week. Then I typically like to set up at least, you know, four or five customer meetings a week. That might be a bit aggressive, but it's possible if you can push it. So some weeks might be light, some weeks might be heavy on that. And that takes a lot of like chasing salespeople down, because they're not always keen on getting involved with customers until they have a deal that needs to close, and then they're like, oh, we need you immediately. So I'll usually have some of those pop up where it's like, oh my God, we need you to talk to this customer. We need to get this deal signed, like, you know, something like that. But the rest of the time I'll actually schedule. I have constant customer calls scheduled so that I can ask questions about specific features that I'm thinking about, you know, building or something like that. Probably another portion of that time, still in the customer realm, is taken up by partners that are constantly hounding us to integrate with us. And so I have to deal with that, discuss on the phone what the options are, evaluate whether it's even worth it, stuff like that. And then the other percentage of the time, I'm you know, by myself or with other product managers, and I'm writing requirements documents. And like usually I'll reserve like all of Wednesday, I'll just write requirements documents. Or I'll do some research on, like, if I've heard of some major issues that have come up that week, then I'll do some research on that on the product. What are the support tickets that have come through? You know, if I test it out, what happens? What am I missing here that's making it customers not unhappy? That's a typical week, I'd say.
Thursday, Friday, drinking.
Yeah, exactly. there's one in the back there. Well, I mean, usage is a pretty good indicator. So if you can gauge that within 3 months of launching something that not one person's using it, it's likely that it's not going to do well. And it could be that things move slower in the enterprise world because they need to upgrade and then they need to get the funding. You know, things move a bit slower. But we it depends what your goals are, right? Because, you know, you might be, like, for example, right now we're launching a feature that is going to easily tell you, in our cloud product, easily tell you what's going wrong with your database and what you can like, click to just fix that problem. So in order to know if that's succeeded, like, usage is important to know if people are actually going to that page. What's more important is it actually improving their performance, and that we can measure. We can measure like the efficiency of their queries to determine, you know, does it actually have a positive impact? So it kind of depends on what the feature is, but typically things like usage, revenue, and then like some kind of quantifiable result. That totally depends on who your customer is. In my case right now, it's typically a developer, a DBA, or a manager of like a DevOps group or something. In my previous role, it was advertisers, or advertiser like techie types, like, you know. But it totally depends on what your product is, who your end user is. Yeah, I didn't cover that, actually. I didn't talk about product management really at all. That varies based on organization. So in early startups, you'll typically see like the CTO and then like a bunch of product managers, and no one really has a title or anything. They're just kind of all just trying to make this company work. In the more mature product organizations, like at Google or at Amazon or something, you would typically see an APM, an associate product manager, and then a product manager, and there's usually like a few levels in there that you can progress through. A senior product manager, a group product manager, and then like director, VP. Now, the APM is is just what you'd expect. Like, they're brand new out of school. The product manager has ownership over one particular product. A senior product manager may have a bit more scope to deal with, like, you know, something that probably could have 1, 2 to 3 product managers. And then a group product manager has a whole product area. And then sort of just goes up from there. Is that what you're looking for? It totally depends on what company you're in and you know, yeah, it's hard to say. I don't think there's a real baseline there. I think you'd expect like 1 to 2 years between each ranking. You're asking me where should you start?
What other consideration, like, what I expect when I...
Yeah, yeah. Right. If you go into a big product management organization, you will you'll have probably less of a product to manage because it's just a big bureaucratic company. You'll probably get more formalized training and skills on how to be a product manager. You'll get a good understanding of how to run a scaled product management team and like what good practices are. If you go into a small startup-y type environment, you'll probably get more responsibility. You'll probably get more exposure to larger, to higher up folks in the firm. But it'll be a bit more chaotic. Like, you won't really have good systems in place, and it might be tough to figure out what to do. And, you know, so it depends on what you're looking for. I think maybe we don't have much time, so I think maybe one more question. One more. Okay. Way back. That's a really difficult question. I mean, what I would say is, like, the big tech companies, their profile, like, a consultant is a good profile for them for hiring product managers. So they shouldn't be writing off a consulting background. Like, that is a traditional background. In fact, a lot of these companies do try and have non-traditional, you know, people with military service or someone that's been in the arts or whatever, they do find that important. Smaller companies do often try and look for, like, specific knowledge in a field because they're in such a pinch to you know, produce, and they don't want, like, a six-month ramp-up time. So that can be slightly more challenging. I think the way to break through there is just to get referrals and get to know people in the company. And yeah, I wish I had more to say on that.